Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Welcome to Point of View, and thank you so much to Rufilwe. She'll be back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Let's kick off our Point of View. We're doing this until 10 today. But I'm sure some of these stories you've heard already, but we obviously have to take them forward and get a sense of other things. So earlier on today, I saw the headlines coming through. We've all been speaking about what's happened at Helen Joseph. So we've seen that story. But I was struck by something else. I was struck by the fact that the complainant was now in a new hospital. So I just wanted to get a sense of what exactly all of this means. And we have now on the line Tsholofelo Tsoko, who is a Kaya News reporter, who went off to Morningside to kind of get a sense of, you know, how our wonderful patient is doing. Tsholofelo, good evening. Tom London has been discharged. I'm not sure if he's discharged or he discharged himself from Helen Joseph and is now a happy patient at Morningside Hospital. Hello, Tsholofelo.
Hi, good evening, Pimela. Thank you so much for having me. Yes, indeed. Tom London is a very happy patient currently at Morningside Mediclinic as we speak. In actual fact, he discharged himself on Saturday after he said he simply could not deal with the horrific treatment that he saw other patients getting at Helen Joseph and even himself.
And so, you know, just maybe take me through the chronological order. I don't want to take people through the entire thing. I think they've heard it all day today, in fact, from yesterday. But just a sense of when he says he discharged himself, did he know where he was going? Was he, because I saw him being wheeled into Morningside, or did he go home?
What happened actually, while he was still at Helen Joseph, it seems that he was actually talking to a few of his friends, and he ended up being able to get people to really put some money together and help him to get to Mediclinic. So this happened very quickly. I mean, by Sunday, Tom London was at Mediclinic.
And so they picked him up from Helen Joseph?
So he actually went home.
He went home, okay.
Actually, he says to me, the night before, what actually really spooked him out the most was the fact that he was actually lying on his bed in the late hours of the evening, and somebody had actually taken his phone from him, and he actually didn't realize, but the patient that was opposite him said, hey, somebody just took your phone, and they tried to get this person, tried to get the call, well, rather, to call his phone with no avail, but eventually they did get the phone, and he actually realized, I am not safe.
And did they, you know, did they manage to get who took the phone from him?
Actually, shockingly, it's another patient that took the phone.
And staff did not pick this up.
Well, he says, according to his recollection, is that one of the nurses that was actually attending to this patient that had taken the phone actually did see the phone, but it doesn't seem that anything was really done to really get to the bottom of how this person ended up taking Tom London's phone and why.
So let's talk about his journey to Morningside. He told us that he had a procedure that was scheduled again today. How was he feeling? You sent us some lovely pictures of him. He's now clean, he's clean shaven, and seems like he had a bit of a haircut. Talk to me about how he was feeling. Oh, we've lost him. Tsholofelo Tsoko is our reporter. We're going to try and get back to her because I just wanted to get a sense of how Tom London was doing. But let me just quickly go to Jack Bloom, who we've always spoken to under these circumstances. He is the DA Shadow MEC for Health. Jack Bloom, thanks very much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Yeah, good evening. Good to be with you.
Okay, what do you make of this latest? I mean, we've spoken a lot about other leaked videos and other videos of complaints. What do you make of this latest one?
Well, it's obviously a genuine account of his own experience, a terrible experience in the public hospital. Not uncommon, I'm afraid to say. And I must say, how many thousands of other patients have similar terrible experiences, but they don't go on social media. And in fact, many people are afraid to complain. This is, you know, quite scary, because imagine you're in a hospital and you're worried about if you complain that the nurses and doctors won't treat treat you as well as they should, and so you keep quiet. So I think there's far too much of it. And of course, it highlights the ongoing problems at our hospital. You know, every so often we have a social media event that we get sort of huge attention, and then we have promises by the Gauteng Health Department that they're going to make changes, then nothing really changes, and then we get another incident. Do you recall that there was a COVID patient at Timbisa Hospital, a terrible case because he subsequently died, but he actually tweeted something about his plight, and the National Health Minister saw it. Then that got a whole investigation by the Medical Ombudsman, who did a scathing report about Timbisa Hospital, and we've had other scathing reports by the Medical Ombudsman. If you recall, Rahima Musa Hospital, there was a terrible CEO there who wanted to suspend Dr. Tim de Meyer because he was exposing how badly children were treated at that hospital. So that's the history of this thing, and I think that the rot at the Gauteng Health Department remains. I said in the Gauteng Legislature doing the health budget this year that I think Crooks are still in charge, and that if the Beta Diakaran was there again at the health department, or another type of Beta Diakaran, there should be silence, as Beta was silenced. You know, good people keep their heads down in that department because there are consequences if you expose corruption.
So, you know, the MEC of Health in Gauteng has published a statement, and one of the things they highlight is that they have this I Serve with a Smile program that's been ongoing. I think it was launched about 9 months ago. In your view, is it working? Is it yielding results?
Well, obviously, it's a big failure at the Helen Joseph Hospital because I visited Mr. Lund and myself yesterday, and, you know, I heard firsthand how shocked he was by the callous attitude of the doctors, that a patient was screaming in absolute pain, and they're talking about their cars, restaurants, their bonus payments. I mean, how does this happen? And Wits Medical School has published a statement about this, actually, and they acknowledge that there are problems with attitudes with medical students and doctors, that they're not adhering to their Hippocratic oath. And that really is problematic. But the other side of the coin, as they do mention, is that our hospitals are understaffed. Medical nurses and doctors often work under great strain. There's broken equipment. There's lack of equipment. But there's no excuse for treating patients with contempt and ignoring them and not having basic empathy and not communicating with them. There's something seriously wrong there. So I think the hospital environment in many hospitals is actually toxic. Now, the problem at Helen Joseph Hospital is they haven't had a permanent CEO for many years, and the present acting CEO, one of many acting CEOs, is actually the CEO of the Rahima Musa Hospital. Now, how do you expect anybody to run two hospitals at the same time? So, you know, the problem in the department as a whole and at individual hospitals is that we don't have top management leadership. We need a decent permanent CEO at Helen Joseph Hospital who cares about patients, who motivates his staff, and that patients are not scared to complain, because that's the issue. I mean, how can it be that doctors are so callous? I mean, why do people go into the health profession in the first place? Surely they have a caring attitude. They want to cure people. It's just something fundamentally wrong. And I think that Mr. London has done us a service by highlighting it. I do want to say that there is a mixed picture as a whole. You know, I deal with public hospitals all the time. There are angels in our hospitals. We have nurses, we have doctors who work under terrible circumstances. They do their very best, and I think we should acknowledge that, but there are bad apples in the system, and there's very poor discipline in the Gauteng Health Department. But overriding this all is the fact that I think the corruption is still there. The SIU has just given an estimate of what they think was stolen, mismanaged, wasted at the Timbisa Hospital. It's 3 billion rand over 3 years. Now, that's just one hospital alone. Imagine if that 3 billion rand was spent effectively, and then you wouldn't have crowded casualty units, you wouldn't have broken equipment, you would have, spare beds. The whole thing would be transformed. My big issue at the moment is that Premier Panyaza Lesufi has appointed a new head of department. He appointed him straight after the election, but he only announced it 2 months later, which I find very fishy. I think there were irregularities in this appointment, so I've referred to the Public Service Commission, and they're currently investigating it. But the current head of the Gauteng Health Department, who was previously the acting head for a year, is being investigated by the SIU concerning allegations that he shared an 8 million rand bribe with two other officials. Can you believe it? I mean, how can you appoint a head of this very troubled department where Babita Deokaran was assassinated? We had the Life of Sedd and Mani disaster. We had the PPE corruption disaster. It's just, one disaster after another. And here you appoint a head of department who's actually being investigated by the SIU. It's just unfathomable. And I've protested in the Gauteng legislature. And if you want things to change in this department, I think there's political protection. There's the wrong people in the wrong positions. We have very good people, but they silence, like Babita Deokaran was, or they're not promoted. And until we turn things around, so the good people are put in charge instead of the bad people, well, we're going to continue to have incidents like Mr. London has highlighted.
Your meeting with Mr. Tom yesterday, Tom London, what did you get out of that yesterday? I believe he also spoke to the MEC and the Premier of the province on Sunday. What was your meeting like?
Well, I wanted to meet with him and just get a better understanding of what was happening. And he told me the Premier had contacted him, and I've just been watching his latest Facebook posts. And he apparently had a long conversation with the NEC for Health and the Premier of the province. Well, I hope they took it to heart and they will do the changes that are required. But dishearteningly, the latest Facebook post that he's given is that he's been told by the private hospital that he's at that he requires an operation, in fact, to drain his lungs. It's going to cost 600,000 rand and that he probably has to go back to a public hospital. So he faces a terrible personal dilemma, because I don't think that he can raise the funds to remain at the private hospital. And people can go to his Facebook page and you can see it's heartbreaking. He faces the prospect of having to go back to a public hospital. He fears for his life, but he absolutely needs this operation. So that's his personal dilemma. And look, he's one of thousands of patients that are badly treated in our health system. I think particularly of the cancer patients, where there's a budget there. There's a huge budget to do urgent treatment for cancer patients, but they're simply not using it. So the Cancer Alliance, Section 27 and the TAC are currently taking the Gauteng Health Department to court. Can you imagine that? They have to take the Gauteng Health Department to court because they want the available budget to be used to urgently treat cancer patients.
Yeah,
now, the longer you delay, if you delay with cancer patients, well, they suffer and they die. And I think it's unconscious.
Was he able to tell you what the outcomes of that meeting was with the Premier and the MEC?
I met with him before
the
Premier.
Okay.
But in his Facebook post, for those who haven't said it, he said he had a long conversation with them, and he didn't give specifics of what he said, but I think he recounted the experience and asked them to address the underlying issues. So he will have to give more details. But I think the devastating personal information that he had today is that he may well have to return to public hospital to have this life-saving operation.
All right. I really appreciate you giving us your time. Jack Bloom is a DA Shadow MEC for Health in Gauteng. And listening into that conversation is Modaletale Mudibe, who is Head of Communications and a spokesperson of the province's MEC of Health. He's on the line with us. Mr. Mudibe, thank you so much for being with us. Are you able to hear me? I think you've muted yourself. Mr. Mudibe, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, ma'am.
Excellent. Thank you so much for making time for us. I just wanted to get a feedback. We obviously saw the press briefing, not a press briefing, the press release by your department saying, you know, you've looked into the matter of Mr. Tom London. Give us an update. We believe that the Premier and the MEC met with him. Just give us an update on that meeting.
Unfortunately, one was not part of that meeting. But from the sense that we gather, it is that it was a cordial meeting, and went well in terms of the issues Mr. Tom London would have wanted to raise with them.
Yeah, but I mean, so you don't have a sense of what was the way forward? Did they discuss the way forward together?
I would not have that that sense. I suppose probably because there was a private meeting that they had with him. So I'm not even probably the right person to even speak about that. But I would be misleading yourself and the listeners, because I don't have any update in terms of the nature of the meeting and how it went.
Mm. Did the department get a sense that whatever it is that Mr. Tom London has accused the hospital of doing, attitudes and the like, were you able to ascertain whether all of that was accurate?
I think we need to put, obviously, matters into context insofar as the issues that Tom raised in his complaint. Obviously, there's issues that relates to the patient experience of care, the issues of infrastructure, and then I think on the clinical care issues, he's also on record today saying that he was quite happy with the clinical care that he was given, because obviously he came in a bad state, and 2 weeks later he's much better, and hence he was able to raise the issue that he had raised. So at the clinical level, the protocols and the care that he received, he confirmed that it was actually sufficient. And I think that's why we also were able to come out to say we will subject that to an independent assessment. And so that matter is that one does not arise, because we've dealt with that. But the issue around the patient's experience of care, I think that's where probably the bone of contention is in terms of staff attitude and the manner in which he felt that he was sort of ill-treated when he was at the facility. And that is something that, from a department point of view, we have obviously already acknowledged that there is a challenge in that area. And the reason why we will launch the Save with a Smile campaign is precisely to intervene and to start reorientating our staff and introducing a new way in terms of rendering services to the public. It's introduced because when we do the patient experience of care surveys, they've over time told us that is one of the weak areas that we need to work on. Irrespective of, I know that people usually would raise the issues around the work environment, the working condition, the infrastructure and so forth. Well, you have those challenges, but you cannot excuse certain behavior simply because you've got those challenges. Otherwise, then we hide behind some of these challenges. We need to be able to break down those challenges and deal with them one by one according to their own merit. So the issue of staff attitude is something that we intend addressing robustly. Hence, that program is currently being rolled out. You'd appreciate that we've got quite a huge portfolio in terms of facilities. Just clinics alone, you're looking at over 300 of those, and then you've got 37 hospitals. So it's a long-term process, that we are currently embarking upon. And even now, with this intervention that's currently being made at Helen Joseph, part of the intervention would be to bring forward the issues around the onboarding on the I Serve with a Smile, but to couple that with training on the issue of code of conduct and ethics, the issues around communication skills in terms of communicating with patients that are there. These are some of the things that would have nurses and doctors are trained on as part of their training towards their qualification. But there's a need to constantly be refreshing and constantly be looking at that so that we then refocus people back into the core of why we are in that kind of a space, why we are rendering the type of service that we are rendering. So that is another area that I think we are looking into. And a program has been developed now to also assist Helen Joseph among the many facilities that have had this type of intervention. The last issue, I think, is the issue around the infrastructure that seem to also be raised. I must add a hasten to say, if you go to the facility physically and you look at the clip, it's two different sort of pictures. Yes, the ablution facilities, in particular the ones that Tom London showed, would need some refurbishing, but they are not in a state where they're not usable. And sometimes we enter into this discussion around quality of infrastructure that we currently have. It's a fact that most of the infrastructure is aged, and that's why the department has a maintenance and refurbishment program that is currently being rolled out. In fact, at the very same Helen Joseph, you'd recall that I think it's 3 months back, in May, we opened a refurbished emergency department. That unit was one of the units that used to be, people used to complain that it's always cramped, it's always packed and so forth. We invested on it, we worked on it, it's refurbished, it's bigger, it can accommodate more people and so forth. So we're working to improve the infrastructure, obviously in a phased approach, given the budget challenges that we have. And we're not just looking at Helen Joseph. There's work that we're doing at Barra, there's work that we're doing at George Mukhari, there's work that we're doing in some facilities in Sidi Beng. We are about to start with work that relates to Johan Heinz in terms of refurbishing the entire facility. So there is a maintenance program. Perhaps it might not be moving as fast as we'd want to in terms of the resources that are allocated towards that particular part. The infrastructure issues. Yes.
Mr. Mudibe, I am very aware of the I Serve with a Smile program. You and I have spoken about this before. Have you been able to assess whether it is actually changing attitudes? I know why it was started, but have you been able to assess the program itself so far and whether there's some improvement?
Well, if I look at the patient experience of care survey for 2023-2024, it says that the department scored at 84%, which is 4% higher than the national target that has been set. So although there are some areas where there seems to be we're not scoring that high, and one of those areas is the issue around, I think, staff attitude. Even in the recent patient experience of care, the staff attitude issue again has been it comes out as being flagged, which means it's something that patients that go to our facilities are raising to say, zoom into this particular area and enhance that particular program. So I suppose it's only 9 months since it's launched. Remember, it got launched in November, and we are rolling it out from facility to facility, facility to facility. So in facilities where the program has been launched, like Timbisa, like Pulusong Hospital, they were seeing a positive change. In the coming, during this month, we're going to be launching it in Sidi Beng as well. And then obviously we will have to bring forward the issue of Helen Joseph as well. So where the program is currently has been launched and ambassadors have been inducted and so forth, there is a positive change. But I think because the behavior change type of an issue, we need to give it a bit more time to be able to see what the patient of experience of care surveys that are coming up will tell us in terms of this. But I think this issue that has happened at Helen Joseph, it's also a wake-up call to say we need not rest on our laurels and assume that just by launching these programs, automatically we'll see change. It means we need to, I think, also put in place some monitoring systems that will also ensure that we keep on checking, even at facilities where we've already launched the program, to ensure that they were able to sustain the positive experience. Because what people are saying is that, yes, we know that you've got all these other challenges, but you cannot use those challenges as an excuse for not greeting a patient when you go and see a patient. We've got what we call the aided model of communication that we've introduced. And that model says, we must be able to, when you're interacting with a patient, basic etiquette of just being able to acknowledge that a patient is there, introducing yourself and what you are there for, explaining the duration of the service, but also explaining the type of care or the type of procedure that the patient will undergo.
I'm gonna rush you a bit because
things
of
that
time.
We should be able to do.
Yeah, just quickly.
Yes.
How far is your department with the appointment of a permanent CEO? At Helen Joseph.
Next week we have interviews. Next week, you recall that we started the process quite a while back. Unfortunately, the first round we could not find a suitable candidate. We had to re-advertise again, go back again into the market to try and attract people. So the next set of interviews are sitting next week. Hopefully, out of this process, we will be able to find a suitable candidate.
Yeah, because you can do all these wonderful programs. If you don't have leadership, it's going to be difficult to see progress.
100%. I agree with you. We need to have, obviously, strong leadership that will... And that's part of the process of redress that we're undergoing. And today, there was a session at the facility as well, engaging with the clinicians and the management as well, because part of this challenge is we call on the management in the department in the facility to also reflect, the heads of departments that are heading the special departments to also reflect, to say, to what extent are we contributing towards this type of an environment, and what are the things that we need to do to start changing course? Because a behavior like this does not just happen out of in a vacuum. It happens within a particular context, and I think it behooves upon all of us, especially as public servants, to perhaps remember the servant in public servant. There's a reason why it's a servant. It's called public servant. And sometimes maybe the servant is muted. And I think we need to reignite and ensure that servant is
Mr. Madiba, That line is already starting to fail us. I'm going to leave it there, but I think we got the gist of this. Tsholofelo, I'm so appreciative of the fact that we got you back. Just quickly for me, my question to you before we dropped is how Mr. London was doing, and we are told now he will need surgery and he may not be able to afford it.
Yes, Pimelo, Tom will need surgery. What he said to me earlier on was that there were three options, that the scan that he went to before we did the interview with him, that the scan would show either, number one, the infection that he would have would just need antibiotics. Number two, they would need to insert some sort of tube that would pull out the mucus. Or third would be the surgery, which unfortunately that scan has determined that he will actually need that surgery. However, it needs him to have a lot of money for it, and it seems as though he will have to go to another public facility, which in his conversation with the health MEC, the MEC did promise that she will facilitate that that move to another public hospital.
Oh, so they've come to an agreement of sorts that he will need to go back to the public hospital.
Yes, so the agreement was that should you actually need the operation and you cannot afford it, we will then help facilitate to make sure that you go to another hospital, which would be a public hospital again.
So he is getting a procedure done today at Morningside, and after that he will be transferred.
So at the moment, we cannot confirm that the procedure is happening today. But what we do know is that it seems as though the procedure does need to be done. Whether it's going to happen at MediClinic or whether it's going to happen at the public hospital is what we're yet to find out.
All right, Sulufela Zoku, who is our reporter, who went to see Tom London today, who is now at Morningside Hospital. We spoke to him earlier. He's getting his procedure done right now as we speak, and perhaps tomorrow he may be moved to another public facility. We'll keep an eye on the story.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.